March 8th is International Women's Day. It is a time to celebrate the accomplishments and strengths of women. For too long, women were left out of the history books and denied the rights and privileges that men had. No voting, no owning property, almost no separate identity. The first International Women's Day was celebrated in 1911 in Germany and Austria and has gone worldwide. In some places, it is a national holiday. For many years, the United Nations has held an annual conference to coordinate international efforts for women's rights. 1975 was designated as International Women's Year. Women's organizations and governments around the world hold large-scale events to honor women's advancement. Thank you, John. Yet there is much left to be done, even though many might think that all is better now, at least here in Canada. But if we look at the ranks of parliamentarians and legislators across this country and around the world, we see relatively few women there shaping their countries. There is much yet to accomplish. Patriarchy has a long history and is ingrained and complex. Unfortunately, women are still not paid as much as their male counterparts, even here in Canada. Women still are not present in equal numbers in business or politics. And globally, women's education, health, and the violence against them is worse than that of men. True, improvements have been made. There are female astronauts and prime ministers. Girls are welcomed into university. Women can work as well as have a family. Women, at least in the developed world, have choices. The tone of International Women's Day, at least in the developed world, has moved from being a reminder of the negatives to a celebration of the positives. Annually, on and around 8th of March, thousands of events are held to inspire women and to celebrate women's accomplishments and achievements. Let us begin right here at Beacon with three women's stories representing three generations. And this first story is from Ivy Hubbard. Now, Ivy is off, as we know, in far and foreign lands, relaxing. She writes, "When I was born in 1927, I was lucky. When I grew up, I would be able to call myself a person. Actually, that privilege didn't happen until 2 years later, in 1929. A group of women nicknamed the Famous Five had challenged the Supreme Court of Canada to define the word person. They asked, 'Are women persons?' The court said no. So they took their case to the Privy Council in England, which was the court of higher authority, and after much debate, it was finally decided that, yes, women are persons. Of course, I was a little young to really appreciate it at the time, but these women had done many things to make my life easier. When I was old enough, I would be able to vote. When I married, if I had any money or property, it would still belong to me, and I could be educated for as long as I wished to be. Of course, I was born," says Ivy, before many things we take for granted today were even thought of. Television, penicillin, frozen foods, the pill, credit cards, ballpoint pens, dishwashers, clothes dryers, computers. I grew up during the Big Depression. A friend of mine told me many years later that she thought we must be rich because we lived in a big house. I had nice toys to play with and wore nice clothes. Well, the house was rented, my toys were birthday and Christmas presents, and my mother made all my clothes. Her friend, couldn't know that sometimes my mother had to decide whether to use 75 cents to buy food or coal. I know now that it must have been a very difficult time for my parents, but they gave me a very good childhood. The other big event in my young life was World War II. My father and brother joined the forces but never went overseas, so we didn't have to worry about them being killed, which was a blessing. There were difficult times during the war years, but it did open up many opportunities for women to work in jobs that had been men's work. I know that I never thought about becoming a nurse or a teacher, but I was steered into taking university entrance courses in high school. I stayed with that to the end of grade 10, when I switched to commercial for grade 11. Then I got a summer job working for the Underwood Typewriter Company and decided to finish my education on the job. It was many years later, listening to a speaker at the YWCA about the problem of school dropouts, that I realized that I was one. A big surprise. She worked there, I think she means at the typewriter company, for 6 years until she married and moved out of town. Ivy had a job in an office after she was married, but after her daughter was born and they moved back to Vancouver, her husband and Ivy decided that they would live on his salary and Ivy would stay home with the children. Sometimes an extra salary would have come in handy, but they stuck to their decision. After the children were both in school, she decided she needed to find herself. Ivy joined the YWCA. She took programs and volunteered and served on the board of directors for 6 years. She worked as a docent in the Vancouver Museum for 12 years. She says, "I have worked as a volunteer in many organizations, and although the pay wasn't great, the rewards were many. Nowadays, a girl or a woman can be pretty well anything she wants to be, with perhaps the exception of a ski jumping in the Winter Olympics." Of course, there are still challenges and circumstances that prevent women from following their dreams, but reflecting on the challenges the women had in the early 1900s and even up to the 40s in promoting women's rights, women have come a long way. We have a lot to thank the famous five for. Let's have the choir.
I was born in 1946, the oldest of the post-war baby boom. During the war, my mother joined the workforce in a non-traditional job as an airplane riveter.
You've heard me talk of her as Rosie the Riveter. However, when the men came home and were demobilized, she, along with most of the women, married their sweethearts, settled down, and had babies. And when I graduated from high school in 1964, the expectation was that I too would find a short-term career from a set of prescribed jobs until I was married and settled into raising a family. I chose teaching as a career as opposed to the other choices of being a nurse or a lab technician. I didn't take typing courses, so wasn't suitable for secretarial work, and was too tall to be an airline stewardess. And that was the ultimate glamour job in those days. I can't remember any other options but those. Not one of the bright girls I went to school with ever thought of being a doctor or a lawyer or a business manager. Marrying one, yes. But aspiring to that lofty height, never. And so after university, I went out and got a job teaching elementary school until I got married and then became pregnant with my first child. My grown daughter can hardly believe that I had to quit my job because my pregnancy was showing. It was a requirement. I even got into terrible trouble with my principal for allowing a child to touch my baby bump. I know, those were very different times, and yet we were on the verge of change. As a young mother at home with two small but very welcome children, it never occurred to me that there were forces out there fomenting change until I started to read. Books like Memoirs of a Prom Queen, The Feminine Mystique, and the female eunuch blew my world apart. That famous aha moment had arrived. There were choices in the world, and I had the rights and responsibilities to make them. Although I was married to the most supportive of men, it was time for him to be deposed from his throne. I really don't know how our marriage survived this change, but I'm glad it did. Together with about 20 other women, including Mary Kendall and our very own Lutina Santing, who's sitting right over there. Wave your hand, Tina. Yeah, she was one of us. We started a women's center in Port Coquitlam where women could come together and discuss, often for the first time, what they wanted to do. Many of us with this support went back to school or work. Others started a transition house so that battered women could be safe. We tried to raise our children in gender-free environments, often with hilarious results. My daughter always picked the pink feather boa at play school when I was shoving a truck at her. But life as we knew it was forever changed. We marched and lobbied for reproductive rights, for daycare, and for pay for work of equal value. Our daughters and granddaughters would have more choices than we did. And, of course, today they do. My daughter is an entrepreneur running her own Montessori school. My 13-year-old granddaughters operate much the same as their male counterparts. The world is their oyster, and heaven help any boy that tries to tell them what to do. What do I reflect on International Women's Day? That I am happy to have played a part in women's emancipation from traditional roles, although I have loved being a mother and a wife. I reflect on how hard it is to have it all, and caution my daughter that you can have it all, but not all at once. There's a price to pay for being a mother, and there are huge benefits as well. Balancing a career and family are not easy, but they still can be done. And I know that there are many women sitting in the congregation today that know all about that. And I'm so grateful to have had both a family and a career. I appreciate the women like Ivy who came before me, who got us the vote, who sustained us with their mothering and their strength. On International Women's Day, I celebrate being a woman. And I remind the younger women not to take the word feminist in vain. The work my generation did changed the world for women forever. May we all continue to strive for a world of equality and justice for both our girls and for our boys. And there's an example right there.
I think I've got. Oh, you got it. Okay. So, what was that you said about not all at once, Mercy? All right. Okay. All right. I was born in 1976 to hippie parents who rejected the cultural mainstream. My father wore long hair and a long beard and worked as a self-trained goldsmith. He made jewelry in the back of our house and sold it out of a room in the front. My mother left her job at a bank to stay home when I was born. In my house, the adults chopped wood for heat and held meditation circles. And until I was 9 years old, nobody left to go to a real job. My parents wanted my sister and me to believe that we could be anything we wanted to be. And at that time, it was a popular message. A lot of TV shows reinforced the idea. There was a common storyline that went like this. A hapless man is looking for Dr. Pat Smith, only to discover that the woman he assumed was the receptionist is actually the doctor. Hilarity ensues. Should we all recognize that one? We learned not to judge a book by its cover and that women could be doctors just as well as nurses. I believed it. It never occurred to me that I couldn't do something based solely on my gender. I think most of us got the message because you just don't see Dr. Pat Smith on TV anymore. She's not that noteworthy, although I am extremely grateful for her example. I graduated first in my class from high school, and I did just as well in math and science as English and French. In my grade 12 honors physics class, there were 9 students, 5 of us were girls, and 4 of us girls pursued careers in science and technology, including me. I studied engineering at SFU, which is the first place I encountered any sort of gender gap. Women made up only about 20% of the students in my classes, although I didn't feel really singled out or discriminated against. I finished school and worked full-time as an engineer in a male-dominated environment for 5 years before my daughter was born. I was treated with the same respect as my male colleagues, and I generally liked my job. The work environment was comfortable and I was paid well. We had team-building activities and treats on Wednesdays and flex time. My coworkers' offices were filled with old textbooks and pictures of their children, and there were company-wide policies ensuring that all employees were treated fairly. Things changed a bit once I was pregnant. People joked about how I was leaving them to have a baby, and I didn't laugh. I wondered why my decision to procreate implied that I lacked commitment, but my male colleagues' similar decisions did not. I used every bit of the year-long maternity leave available to me. When I returned to work, I negotiated a part-time schedule. I wanted to be able to spend time with my daughter and have something approximating balance. I understood that, if it could ever happen. I understood that working less and telecommuting would affect my career trajectory, at least for a time. I was willing to sacrifice professional advancement, though. Kids grow quickly, and I don't want to miss it. All the same, questions nagged at the back of my mind. Why was I naturally the one who worked less when the babies came? Would I be able to recover from my time on the mommy track? And how come it was so hard to find quality childcare? And why don't more fathers take advantage of flexible work policies or parental leave? I worked for a couple of years before having another baby. I was laid off during my second maternity leave in a company-wide downsizing. I definitely was not singled out. But I still wonder if things would have been different if I had been working full-time and childless when the downsizing happened. When you lay off half of your employees, choosing the one who's at home with a baby and only works part-time seems kind of obvious. When one of my former coworkers asked me if I even had to find another job, it reinforced that as a mom, my value in the workplace was maybe a little bit suspect. I'm not that old at 33, but over my lifetime, Dr. Pat Smith and I have seen gender roles shift. Pretty much any career path is open to a woman if she chooses to pursue it. In my home, housework is pretty evenly distributed, and I have clean clothes thanks to my laundry-doing husband. I do my best to approach parenting my son and daughter with gender neutrality. And yet the glass ceiling still exists, especially for mothers. While parental leave is available to fathers in Canada, only 11% of them take any. It's very uncommon to see men working reduced or alternative schedules to care for children. And in the most egregious example to me of having no way to win, moms still hear statements like, well, why even have kids if you're not going to raise them yourself? Women bear the brunt of child rearing and face most of the conflict over balancing career and family. I want that to change. I would like everyone to have better access to family-friendly work policies, and I would like to see the stigma for using them vanish. I suspect many men feel the same way. Parents of either gender would love to spend a Tuesday afternoon at the beach with their kids building sandcastles. There are dads who would love to be at-home parents, at least for a while. Our current system doesn't really work perfectly for anyone. On International Women's Day, I am so grateful for my foremothers who fought so that I can be an engineer and have reproductive freedom and maternity leave and daycare. I am tremendously grateful to live in a country where my rights are not significantly diminished just because I'm a woman. But I also am reflecting on the work there is still to do. I am considering how I can contribute to creating a world that is more equitable for everyone and which better celebrates diversity and variety in life paths and choices. That is the world that I hope my children and grandchildren will inherit.
Our stories flow together into one river. In the river, the water continually flows on, yet the river is ever there. Our lives flow on in endless song, yet life and joy shall never end, and the story flows on.